I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Talk to the Audience. I'm your host for this one, as always, Bob Mackey. And who's here with me today?
Alf Clausen apologist, Henry Yelbert. Hello.
Hey, he's a musical supervisor now or something.
Yeah.
He's got a lot more free time on his hands, I think.
Yeah. So this is our regular, I guess, monthly community podcast where we talk to the audience.
Yes. If you're new to the Patreon, every month we gather comments from the episodes we post on LaserTime and Patreon. We talk about Simpsons news and like Simpsons related news, and we also talk about what's happening with our network of shows and our Patreon. And one thing I wanted to bring up before we start is if you download podcasts from the LaserTime feed, you might notice that they're disappearing one by one. So Chris set up the hosting, and the way the hosting works, I gather, is that the LaserTime feeds will only carry the most recent 100 episodes of any podcast. So I believe as of this recording, the earliest podcast you can download is Bart versus Thanksgiving from that LaserTime feed. Mm-hmm. It's still available on the internet, but you can't download it through an MP3 player.
Yeah, like you could go to lasertimepodcast.com and just go to the webpage for any of the Simpsons episodes and just download it directly there. Like the it is still there for direct download, but it isn't. They're disappearing from podcast servers. So especially if you are a new sign up, you're just not going to get access.
You might be wondering where those episodes are if you're just using the feed or a podcast player or something like that. So what we're going to be doing is, I'm going to be, or Henry, I don't know who's doing the work here.
We'll do it together.
Let's decide on the air. Okay. No, that's fine. Doesn't matter. We're going to be uploading the episodes as they start to disappear. And one week you might see three or four go up at a time. That's going to be normal just because I want to catch up to where the episodes are disappearing. So if you see a lot in your feed one day, please don't get mad. We're just catching up, and those will be available in our Patreon feed forever. So you don't have to worry about having to like use your shitty iPhone media player to download those or play those. Yeah. I hate that thing. It's so terrible.
It has improved in the 11 update, I will say. It's gotten
I haven't
better.
Downloaded that. Okay.
It's actually better. For one thing, it doesn't. If I open up a file in Safari, it doesn't take over Safari and just make it the media player. Now it's just its own.
Wow, I need to download that update. So yes, that is our biggest news for now, is that we will be uploading those episodes as they start disappearing from the LaserTime feed. They will exist forever on the internet, but if you're a person who likes using feeds to download podcasts, as I do.
I do too.
Yes, yeah. it's much more convenient. So we'll be putting those in the feed, and one day a lot might appear at once, but after that there'll be one a week as they begin to disappear.
And I think we'll remove the ads from them too, just to do like the tiniest bit of editing, just to take those out. I mean, who wants to hear an ad for
a debt affiliate deal?
Yeah, a debt affiliate deal from 3 years. We've been doing this 2 years now, I do believe.
So those will be 2015 episodes you hear. Mm-hmm. And disregard any mention of the website Fandom when you listen to those. Don't go there.
Well, we'll only do that in like the 2016
that's
episodes.
That's true.
Definitely never go there.
Yes, we're not there anymore.
That's the very important point. I hate even when when just in research I'm taken to the Simpsons Wikia. I'm like, I want to go to the other Simpsons Wikipedia give money to bad people.
Too many bad memories. Yeah, I even bleeped their name out of a recent Retronauts because I was still working there when I recorded it. So that's our airing of grievances for now.
I think I edited out a couple references to it from Talking Simpsons.
I'll gladly use their name to complain, but not to promote. So do you want to get into the comments?
In previous ones, we did talk about like any Simpsons news that broke, but I don't really think any has since then.
No.
Like the new season premiere happened, and I definitely got to feel slightly jealous looking at pictures of the premiere event that every animator in LA went to. Apparently,
that sounds great.
I just saw here's the Gravity Falls guys. They're there. Here's Justin Roiland at the party, and it was apparently an hour long. Like it was technically a two parter. So this was a new two parter.
I haven't heard anything about it. I wonder if it was any good.
Magic fantasy related.
Okay. I don't hate New Simpsons.
Sure.
Chris kind of talked me into watching some recent ones, and I jumped around, and I'm like, I don't get mad at this anymore.
I mean, the 10 minutes I saw that Yale episode really,
oh, yeah,
really pissed me off.
They make some missteps, but they did with season 6 too. So
yeah, they always do. Yes, yeah. Which we're going to get into in some of these comments as well. But and I guess, yeah, there's no real update on Alf Clausen other than they're just like, oh, he's still a music supervisor, meaning they're not going to pay him to write new music.
It was kind of a Weasley way to get out of, talking about what they did to him. It's like, no, he still works here. It's like for about 2 days a week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just PR stuff. And the next time we interview, if we get to interview Bill Oakley again, I do want to know, like, who is Richard Sakai? Like, what? Is he just the hatchet man?
I want to crack that nut.
I have the bad news that James L. Brooks has to share. Is that his job?
Like, the messenger.
It's just weird. The only time I think he's ever been on a commentary was for like 10 minutes of the Simpsons movie, and then he leaves.
Yeah, and he's listed as a producer sometimes. I'm like, is he writing jokes? Is he writing anything?
Or does he just sit in the room and collect a I don't know. I mean, there were the jokes that Smithers is him, and he is the Smithers to James L. Brooks's Burns,
right?
Which I wouldn't not believe.
Yes, it sounds pretty plausible based on what I've heard of their relationship. So, do you want to get into these are the comments from the Talk to the Audience episode from last month? Do you want to go ahead and grab this first one?
Sure. And apologies if I mispronounce anybody's name here, like Regine Lagasse. Regarding the perceived decline in quality of The Simpsons, something I don't hear mentioned enough is that if you want to write or animate on a primetime cartoon in 1990, and who wouldn't, you only had one place to go, The Simpsons. All of the talent was funneled toward one show, but by the late 90s, you had maybe a dozen primetime cartoons competing for staff. Maybe this is an obvious point I don't need to put into text, but having the amount of talent that early Simpsons had seems exceptionally rare these days. And I think that's a really good point. Like, I'd never thought of that the reason when they finally did figure out how to make Simpsons imitators that got more than one season, like King of the Hill, and even they started just producing more one-season shows like The Oblongs, they had to get people from The Simpsons.
Yeah.
So they offer good money, and hopefully, to take away the Wes Archers and even just the lower level writers who were doing well.
And there were fewer good shows on TV in the early years of The Simpsons. I mean, there was there were things like Roseanne and Seinfeld and some good dramas, but most of the sitcoms were just garbage.
Yeah.
So if you were a smart sitcom writer, you would want to go to The Simpsons. You would not want to write for Full House or the
Veronica's
Hogan Family
Closet.
Or whatever. Yeah.
You wouldn't want to write for anything. It's one of my favorite jokes in the new season of BoJack. He has a joke where he says, like, oh, what was the name of that show? Suddenly Sue's Town?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. That show was on for 5 years, and I don't even remember the name of it. Is that how life is? You just do this giant thing, and nobody remembers it?
I mean, the area between Friends and Seinfeld was very fertile.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, God. The single guy. How many hours of my life wasted watching the single
guy? Men Behaving Badly? Was that
Caroline
one of those things,
in the
too?
City.
Yeah. Let's move on to a comment from Gretchen. I think this is based on our comments about Jennifer Crittenden.
And Mimi Pond.
In their comments. I mean, Mimi Pond's comments. We have not heard from Jennifer Crittenden. Maybe we'll reach out to her. Maybe she'll talk to us sometimes. That'd be great.
I did send a tweet at her. She did not reply. So we'll see.
I think older people don't check their tweets as much as I do, which is I never stop.
Always
posting.
Be online. Yeah. Never stop posting.
Always refresh Twitter, no matter what you're doing. So Gretchen,
I got to do that right now.
Gretchen says, certified lady opinion alert. Honestly, I'd have been far more surprised to hear that it wasn't a sexist boys club among that staff and basically any staff of any comedy, especially of that era. It's disappointing, sure. And as much as I love the show, I do think it would have been even better with more diverse voices. Bob made a good point about the possible connection between enjoying the later seasons in the classic era and the presence of a female writer, as those are my favorite seasons too. But that said, well, I keep thinking back to an Onion headline about a woman setting aside her feminism for 30 minutes so she can enjoy a TV show. It's easier now to find and consume media created by women, yes. But cynically, I just tend to assume that most of the things I watch and love are still created by majority white men unless told otherwise.
Yeah. I do love that. I love that Onion article, too, of just woman has to set aside for 30 minutes or else she just couldn't enjoy anything.
It's devastatingly true. And I think what she says is true about how the majority of TV writing staff is probably white, because whenever it's not a majority of white people, they have a press release about it. It's like, we have not white people writing for us this time.
Yeah, I mean, diversity is used as a PR as part of a PR machine, which, hey, I'd rather they do that than not do it.
I'm not complaining about that, but it's like that it's necessary to let people know because it is so abnormal for TV writing.
Yeah, and this kind of came up. Rick and Morty has become a controversial show this
It really
season.
Has.
Well, just because, as happens with anything that becomes super popular, it gets fans who aren't like me or people who I would not agree with, who especially read Rick as a aspirational figure, which then you have to have the discussion of how much is the show enforcing that or not.
Well, that latest episode, I think they're kind of leaning into it in a way I don't like.
I haven't watched this episode. Oh, dear. But part of that, too, is that they didn't have any women on the writing staff for seasons 1 and 2, to my knowledge. And in season 3, they made a real effort to hire several new women writers. The effect of that is that I think they did have multiple episodes where somebody calls Rick on his bullshit. It's just like, you may be smart, but you're shitty.
Yeah.
But then people online say, well, this only happened to Rick because a girl wrote it.
It's like whenever you see a meme on Facebook or Twitter with the Heath Ledger Joker dispensing wisdom, and you're like, no, the Joker is the bad guy who's crazy.
Yes, Batman is the good guy.
And he also doesn't know much about taxes either, so don't put those words in his mouth.
I know, yeah. All right.
I do want to say one thing, though. I mean, people online were getting mad about the women writers of Rick and Morty, and they were trying to figure out which episodes they wrote. You know, they're credited as writers, and people were like, well, you know, a woman wrote Pickle Rick, and that's the best episode of the season. I disagree with that, but I'm also, as a TV nerd, it makes me angry to think, like, you guys know nothing about TV writing. If your name is on a script, that does not mean you had the idea for that episode. It does not mean you're responsible for most of the content of that episode. So all these people doing detective work are annoying me because they don't know enough about TV writing.
Yes. Well, especially in the case of a show ran by Dan Harmon.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Dan Harmon has been, especially on Community, he was more clear than anybody else of, like, I rewrite everything. Like, it's all through me. They harmonize a script, meaning he super duper rewrites it. It's not saying he comes up with every joke, but every joke goes through his screening process.
And there is a writer's room. Actually, I just listened to the first season of Commentaries for the first time. I don't know why I put it off for so long. But there's a funny moment on one of the episodes where Dan Harmon is he's dressing down Justin. He's like, you need to be in that writing room more. And it's not even a joke. He's just dressing him down on the commentary. I'm like, wow, this is uncomfortable.
There's another moment on there where he tells him, like, boss, you're freaking out, please. Like, he says he has to basically babysit Justin by saying, like, boss, could you calm down?
Yeah.
All right, Treehouse of Horror 5 comments. Let's get to those. Joe Hodgson, not to be confused with Joel, says, really enjoyed hearing Kat talk about how she got caught up in the classic era of The Simpsons. Probably my favorite Simpsons memory isn't a specific episode or event, but just learning the syndicated schedule so I could watch the maximum amount of Simpsons every weeknight. Where I live, Fox 25 would show The Simpsons at 6, then this tiny station out of New Hampshire would show an episode at 6:30, then back to Fox for a third episode at 7. That was probably every weeknight for me for a good 3 years or so. The only drawback is that I saw the episodes so much in syndication that I have a hard time remembering my reaction to watching them in the first airing, which was appointment viewing, naturally. A lot of compliments for Kat.
Definitely
want her back. We're working hard to get her back. It's schedule permitting. She is the EIC of a website, which is kind of time consuming.
A lot of work goes into running a game website.
Yes, but I definitely want her back. But this reminded me, too, of just so many, the difference of experiences, I think, with fans, and especially me and you, but also Chris, of just, I have first-run memories of The Simpsons, and it's not that I would not watch the syndicated ones. If it was on, I'd turn it on, but all I'd see is the missing scenes, or I'd be like, well, if I put in my VHS tape, I wouldn't have to watch commercials, so I didn't think too much of syndicated shows because I could watch The Simpsons whenever I wanted on my blessed VHS.
I would just watch an hour every day, even though I still recorded it, because it's like, why would I ignore this? And then I would go to snpp.com, look at the syndicated cuts list, just to be like, okay, I wasn't imagining things. There was a joke there.
Yeah, it hurt my brain of like that, like, I know something's missing here. This is incomplete. Even though, as the deleted scenes have shown us, we see incomplete shows. Every episode removes something to make it to air.
And I watched every episode in its first run outside of Itchy and Scratchy Land up until season 19 or 20, but I've seen the syndicated versions a lot more just because they were on every day. So now when I go back to watch the DVDs, I'm surprised by a joke I might have seen only 3 or 4 times as opposed to 20 times. Next question or comment comes from Kurt's last name. Okay, I'll try this one. Hubrigitst. Kurt, is that, if that's your name, let me know. But I'm sorry I fucked that up so bad. But Kurt says, I am actually really glad you brought up Willie in the closing segment. I remember my dad and I having an argument about who that was when this originally aired. I thought it was Willie based on the way he shouts, Sue! My dad thought it was Abe because Inside Out just looks like Homer, and he thought a family segment made more sense as a closer. We probably rewound that segment 10 times and never came to an agreement. I feel somewhat vindicated now. Yeah, I think it took me a few viewings to figure that out, but you can clearly see the mustache on like the Inside Out Willie.
The gag, that sounds so weird, Inside Out Willie. The gag only makes sense if Willie returns for the last song because he's in every segment. The gag wouldn't make sense if Grandpa's there because he hasn't appeared in every segment. And it's really hard, I get to, for Dan Castellaneta, it's hard for him to show that it's Willie through one word,
one
that he
shouted word.
Shout,
yeah.
Two! Like, it has nothing that would sound like a Scottish brogue in it either. If the letter R was in that word, maybe.
They might have missed an opportunity to kill him again, though. Because he dies in every segment. Bart dies in the end.
It should have been him getting bit. Well, and also, though, as a continuity dork, Inside Out Willie should not reflect his clothed body. It should reflect his ultra buff nude body, so he should not look fat inside out.
That's true. That's true.
Unless, I guess, his clothes are on the inside. But, so little Maddie brings up American Dad kind of did the holiday episode thing with their Christmas ones, at least while they were on Fox. They always got weird and usually had the running theme of Santa versus the Smiths. I like how they subverted the norm and made each of those episodes extra dark. Those are really good. If you haven't watched American Dad episodes, about halfway, like after season 5, they just made every Christmas episode a different one, usually the apocalypse or Santa trying to murder all of them, and there is continuity between them.
Okay.
Sometimes they meet there was one continuity of meeting the Antichrist, who is basically the opposite of Jesus, and then they, in another episode, it's like an Omen parody where the Antichrist is born and he acts like the character when you meet him in the future. And same with Santa Claus has a vendetta against the Smiths, and once every Christmas he will try to kill them. They did that a couple episodes.
Oh, interesting.
Too.
I actually like American Dad. I only watched the first 4 seasons. I feel like I have, I don't know, 12 years to catch up on, but
it's better after those seasons.
Oh yeah, so, yeah. But I think that I remember the first 2 holiday episodes or 3 where Lisa Kudrow played Stan's guardian angel.
Yeah,
there was also a great joke about how there's a subplot about there being a serial rapist on the loose.
Oh, geez.
And Stan was mad they were calling him the holiday rapist and not the Christmas rapist. That is great joke about Stan's character.
Wow,
he wasn't mad about a rapist being on the loose. He was mad that they defined him as the holiday rapist.
That is great.
Yes. So Craig Sniffen says, I'm a web developer and I use the phrase test toast all the time. I use eat a stick of butter as the test string I use for headlines and stuff. It also took me years to realize that's Willie and not a second Homer jumping into the end song. Yeah, a lot of people were fooled by that. Again, it took me a few tries to figure that out.
I just love that at his job, he's like, time to take this for a test toast. So then we get to the Bart's girlfriend comments, and Gretchen again chimes in that, as a minister's daughter myself, I have such a soft spot for this episode, though it took me an embarrassingly long time to realize that Meryl Streep was playing Jessica.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good... Guess what? Meryl Streep's a great actress.
Oh, yeah.
You said multiple times on that episode.
That is also true. Listening to the episode again, I did say they didn't pitch up her voice. Now I'm not entirely sure, but if they did, it was just like so slight. Winona Ryder sounds like she's talking through like a vocoder or something. It's pitched up a little too much in that episode.
It's very distracting. Well, she's playing an 8-year-old versus a 10-year-old, so maybe they wanted to up hers more.
I don't know. Let's ask David Merkin. You know what? He was just on some Beatles podcast. I think he's doing a podcast now.
We should pretend we're doing, like, hey, come to our Beatles podcast. We ask him one question about Abbey Road and then say, so The Simpsons, starting in season 5.
You're stuck here.
Yeah.
So up next, we have something from Mark Kalzer, who says, great show. I would like to expand on the Star Trek discussion. The use of the Planet of the Nazis and Planet of the Gangsters trope was not actually unique to season three. It was rampant all over the first two seasons. The production reason was even then budget. Those 60s backslots had countless leftover props and costumes and set pieces from the past period pieces. In order to save money, Star Trek would reuse those assets creatively by having Kirk constantly come across alien planets that looked exactly like Earth. They later invented an in-universe theory that explained why every second planet looked, acted, and behaved exactly like Earth. It goes beyond both of our languages are exactly the same. In one Roddenberry scripted episode, one planet completely independent from Earth had its own United States with an identical flag and constitution. Kirk, the Canadian, had to explain to this alien creature about the merits of the U.S. Constitution that only happened to be completely identical. Later in TNG, they would invent the holodeck so that they could continue to reuse assets, but not break the universe every time they did so.
Wow, I never realized that the holodeck was so they could reuse sets from other Paramount productions.
Yeah, didn't they go to Victorian England a lot for whatever reason?
My favorite holodeck episodes were when Data and Geordi would be Sherlock Holmes and Watson.
Oh, right, right.
And that led to an episode where the AI created a Moriarty that could outthink Data, and he turned super evil, and so it turned into Moriarty.
I mean, all Moriartys are evil, I think, in some way.
Iron Joe 99 says, in terms of understanding cultural touchstones that were before your time, I think it's really up to the parents. My 7 and 10-year-old daughters religiously watch The Simpsons, and if I think it will make the joke worth it, always a fine calculation, I will pause and explain the history or famous actor behind the joke, unless it's the Krusty Comeback special, in which case I let it play on because I don't have time for that.
That requires like a 2-hour long conversation about Johnny Carson, I think.
I even use the show to explain things to give them background on a specific episode. My mother did this for me as a child, even if she wasn't a huge fan of The Simpsons. She graduated high school in 74 as well, like Homer and Marge, so she was perfectly placed to explain some jokes. Although, I remember a lot of head shakes from her with the exclamations of how stupid, in quotes, the show was. I like to imagine parents today telling their kids, like, well, this is who he is. Like, I also was thinking of Krusty Gets Canceled because we lost another guest to Krusty Got Canceled yesterday.
Oh, Hugh Hefner, right. Passed away. 91, I believe. We are not responsible. 91. We recorded that episode a year ago, I think.
It's true, yeah. Yes. But so he has passed away. Elizabeth Taylor, Johnny Carson. And there was one more, a fourth one, Barry White.
Those, oh, you're right.
Those four are gone.
Yeah.
Still with us are Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Sideshow Luke Perry.
Sideshow Luke Perry. One more. But so we'll see who is the next to go in the death pool. I would think, hasn't a Red Hot died or did he just leave the group? I don't know the Chili Peps that well.
Yeah, actually, I find myself being in this mother role amongst people my age. Like, I'll be watching Mystery Science Theater with somebody, and I know too much old-timey shit. It's my fault. I'm not saying people are stupider than me. I'm just saying I just know too much of this shit. And there'll be a joke about, like, Minnie Pearl, and I'll laugh at it. And my friend will be like, why is that funny? I'll be like, okay, there's a thing called the Grand Ole Opry, and there's a woman who wore a big straw hat with a price tag hanging off of it. And they'd be like, how do you know this? I don't know how I know this. I just do. I'm sorry. It's my cross to bear. You're right, Henry. So
MST3K will cause that discussion more than most shows.
Yes,
I would say.
I just please understand it's funny to me. We have a comment from Rudy De La Tour talking about Bart's girlfriend. I quote this episode a ton in my daily life. I say, "You use me, Skinner! You use me!" every time I get tricked into doing something. I've said probably misses his old glasses. Sorry, that was a little too spirited. Probably misses his old glasses. When someone asks what's wrong with someone, and anytime I'm in the grocery store aisle, I say, well, I eat Fruit Loops for breakfast. 9 times out of 10, okay, 9.99 times out of 10, the person / people around me have no idea what I'm talking about. Yes. You're living in my hell too.
And this last one from Bart's girlfriend is to give Christians the other side of the story, because my telling of the prodigal son could use some corrections. Round the wheel here. I was raised Pentecostal, and I do not recommend it, but at the same time, I don't think glib readings like the one here about the prodigal son will ever sit well with me. The ultimate point of the parable is that no matter how badly you fuck up, one, you can be forgiven, and two, maybe more importantly, you can be deserving of that forgiveness. I think it's applicable today, not just in that do this because God demands its way, but in the more macro real world sense, though I admit it clashes with the way things tend to be today, where someone else does something terrible and social media passes down judgment and swiftly meets out punishment in real time. which would seem problematic, except the person doing the judgment is always spot on, and the ones being punished are typically repulsive worms who deserve everything they get and more. It's a tough thing to grapple with, especially if you are, like me, one of 0.00000000001% of American Christians have more than a single molecule of interest in cracking the thing open. They say they believe in trying to make sense of it and make it work.
I'm glad we have not offended any Christian listeners.
Yes, I mean, I
was wounded by Catholic school, so yeah, that's my excuse.
I am really not into Christianity, and I think it's misused by pretty much everyone. If it means in America, I think America misuses Christianity to an obscene extent. And the message that he's saying that the prodigal son has is one I'd like to believe in, but like Christianity as expressed in America, I don't think believes in that at all in a majority sense.
Let me blow your mind, Henry. Mm-hmm. I think people should be spiritual and not religious. And Kevin Smith made a whole movie about that for millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And it was called Dogma.
That movie was really...
I hate that movie.
That was when my love affair with Smith ended, especially because it was just...
The years of hype on the View Askew webpage.
He talked it up so long.
I knew every plot point before I saw it, too.
Well, because he thought he'd never produce it. And also, Kevin Smith just simply can't shut up, which is why he's a great podcaster.
Oh, for sure,
like
for
us.
Sure.
You just can't stop talking.
You need to hear my opinions, all of them.
But when I watched Dogma, it's when I realized, like, I guess I had matured more than my age I was at when I saw Mallrats and Clerks. But second, it's when I realized, like, all these really good actors are just talking like Kevin Smith and just saying his long sentences of nothing.
And he's giving them line reading so they all sound like him, too.
It's like, maybe Chris Rock knows how to say this. Yeah. Like, maybe give Selma Hayek a break.
He really pissed off Linda Fiorentino.
Oh, yeah. She never came back, did she? Even Chris Rock came back.
She might be hard to work with because she didn't go back to Men in Black either, so you don't know.
Yeah, it's
although
tough. Could be the Mary Tyler Moore syndrome.
Yes, like an assertive woman. Get out of here. These are comments about LAJ, the critic episode. This one comes from Dylan. Batman Boy 11, who says, another note about Quebec from a Canadian. There was a terrorist group known as the FLQ, who fought for Quebec separation starting in the 1960s. Eventually, in 1970, they kidnapped a bunch of government officials, and this led to Trudeau invoking the War Measures Act to deal with the problem swiftly. Group membership and activity went down considerably afterwards. Basically, Quebec's fight for independence is a crock of shit for the most part. Edit. Crock of shit is putting it a bit harsh, but they've done a lot of stupid things for a cause that isn't inherently stupid. And I will say...
we got many Canadians telling us about this.
Based on a 3-second critic joke, I know so much more about Quebec and its fight for independence.
I mean, I did my best to do research on it, but like, I didn't live through it. And America only thinks of Canada in the way that it affects us.
And The Critic is a pretty research-heavy show, and there's a point when I'm doing research, I have to think, how much more do I need to put into explaining this one joke? Like, should I move on at this point?
But because I will need to spend more time on the next joke to understand it. But John Brandon, it was another Canadian, who put into context the quote I had got from Jacques Perrigou, who said that the money and ethnic vote was what caused them to lose. And he says that the money and ethnic votes quote was 100% an anti-Semitic dog whistle, though, along with the undercurrent of ethno-nationalism that some branches of the Quebec nationalists definitely cling to. Quebec is in many ways functionally a separate country with a separate culture, language, and set of laws than the rest of Canada, and is generally loathed by everyone west of Ottawa and vice versa. The Maritimes are just cool with everyone, though. The other big problem is the idea of theirs being the true claim to Quebec and ignoring the indigenous people who were there first. Although, historically, the French had a better relationship with the indigenous nations than the British did, but that's one crazy low bar. And that's something, too, that I... Again, as an American who only thinks of his country, I think of what we did to the indigenous people, which is absolutely fucked up. It's like, Canada did do that too, didn't they? Like,
just the huge amount of genocide we hand wave away when we talk about immigration.
Yeah,
it's like, we belong here. We had to kill a lot of people first.
And I guess that is as this comment is suggesting, that's similarly where the Quebec Freedom Caucus is at too, of just like, no, the French. We are the French. We were here first. Enough of you English. Like, well, you killed all these natives to keep it.
Yeah, let's not use the who was here first argument because you'll lose.
Yes.
So these are Lisa on Ice comments.
Actually, let me read this one.
Oh, sure.
This one is my Jacksonville bro, Travis Foster, saying, "So I love this episode and love Cat Bailey talking hockey. And it's so funny that Henry was talking about my childhood hockey team, the Jacksonville Lizard Kings. Fun fact, I'm currently working on a project on the now defunct team. We are now getting the Icemen. But on kids playing sports and being the son of a former high school jock, I've played way too many sports until I graduated high school. My brother had it worse, though, as he had to play all sports, even the ones he hated. Sports dad culture is fucking awful, and I've seen some really shitty dads during sports, to the point I don't think if I had kids I would ever have them play sports."
Yeah, as I said in Grandpa versus Sexual Inadequacy, I'm very grateful for my parents' passive parenting style, where it's like, if we put them in football games, we'll have to go to them. If we put them in this thing, we'll have to go to it. And frankly, free time is good for everybody. Let's just all have our own free time.
Yes. I mean, that's also why we didn't go to church, though. I think, too, it was that my dad would never give to charity, and he would see even tithing at church as giving money to charity, so he would never do that. My dad will definitely have the, you know, moral high horse and latent racism of most American Baptists.
So the next question or comment is from Joe Moore, who says, "Hey guys, just finished listening to and love the show. In defense of the quote-unquote jerk-ass Homer in this particular episode, I think it's quite clear that he's a super exaggerated parody of the kind of parent who takes kids' sports too seriously. The writers clearly wanted to address this issue, but having Homer act realistically would have made things more relatable and perhaps more disturbing. In my opinion, Homer is so over-the-top and unrealistically cruel that it cannot be mistaken for actual child abuse and works better as a piece of satire. Don't get me wrong, Homer should have limits, but for the subject matter of the episode, I think they got it right. Anyway, just my opinion. Keep up the great work." And that's from Joe Moore. And the jerk-ass Homer thing, I feel like in the video by Super Eyepatch Wolf, one of the arguments was just, oh, these were all very consistent characters until, you know, season 9 or whatever. And I think we disagree with that by saying, no, these characters, they're very malleable. Their interests change, their motivations change. Homer will be way into raising Bart in one episode and then not care in another one. And they're all tailored to fit the needs of the story, and that's fine. And I agree that jerk-ass Homer was used more selectively, but what I was arguing against was that the idea that jerk-ass Homer was invented in like 1998. Like,
yeah.
He's kind of always been there.
I think Mike Scully liked jerk-ass Homer more than other writers
for sure.
And used him more, but yeah, and I also think they sometimes over a point I should have would add to the fall of the Simpsons thing we said last time is I think they started using Homer more as the guy who would notice that the show was getting worse.
And right.
He too often would even say, "I didn't used to do this, did I? I didn't used to have all these jobs."
Like, it's pretty clear I don't go to work anymore.
Michael Paz says, "This is such a great episode. Whenever I watch my daughters play sports, I'm always thinking, hack the bone, hack the bone. If only they had the eye of the tiger and the mouth of a teamster, I wouldn't have to worry about saving for college."
If they do hack the bone, they'll be tried as minors, so it's completely fine.
I mean, horrible things happen on sports fields all the time. That is excused. Like, it's just, it's sports. What are you going to do?
TDFRGSN says, "The ending to this episode always bothered me because if Bart had made the penalty shot, his team would have scored the point and they would have won. But if Lisa blocked it, the score would have still been tied, the exact same outcome. No matter what happened, Lisa's team could never win."
That blew my mind. I was like, Oh, wait, yeah, she could never win. This wasn't her, she'll win or he'll win. It's that she'll cause a tie or he'll win.
I never thought of the story beats as the team, which team will win. It's more about Bart and Lisa are squaring off together in this sports context. And I feel like the score is kind of irrelevant, even though they do show you the scoreboard. This episode is not as devoted to tracking the moments of the game that will make that part of it interesting. It's more about Bart and Lisa, I think.
Yeah. And little Maddie gave, in the episode, I had asked for some insight into gambling and how a tie would work and if they would take Moe's thumbs in the case of a tie, though we also didn't know how Moe bet. We didn't know which side he went on.
That's right.
But so little Maddie said, "Just to chime in on the gambling talk, spreads are done with half point a lot of the time. That way the coin has to fall on one side or the other, even if there's a tie. With hockey, you can also just bet straight across, but the payout wouldn't be as as good. So, for example, you could bet your favorite would win, but the payout would be $2.50 for every $10 you bet. I promise I'm not a degenerate. I just lived in Nevada my whole life.
Interesting. I am not a gambler, so can't use this information.
I am a gambler, but not on sports. It's so comp. I actually do like gambling, but it has to be simple. I have to understand it. So I love. Well, I love slot machines because they're video games. That's what slot machines are. And then the other thing I love now is roulette, which is just like you bet in zones, and if it goes in that zone, you win it. But like, craps makes no sense to me. Poker has too many rules, blackjack has too many rules, and sports gambling has way too many rules.
Yeah, I mentioned this in the episode Lisa the Greek, but my stepdad would be in a sports betting pool, and every Sunday I would see just the giant photocopy of all like the spreadsheet of all the numbers and teams and stuff. I'm like, wow, this is so complicated. Buy a lottery ticket or something.
Now we're on the Homer Badman comments, a couple of the women who commented on it, because I did want to give this viewpoint and give more viewpoints on this. And I will agree with people who said that they wish we'd had a woman guest on as well and not just the three of us, which...
I agree.
I'll take the blame for that we kind of put that recording together a bit late, and that it was just the three of us. We didn't plan to get another guest. And
at the same time, though, no one yelled at us for getting things wrong or being offended, so I feel like we did a good job.
I think we did a good job.
Yeah.
But so this one by Michelle is really long. I'll read it, but it's I think it's all worth saying. And this is her side on watching the episode. Oof, I hadn't watched this episode in a long time and rewatched it before listening. I thought I remembered it pretty well, but apparently as a kid, I was mostly focused on the candy. I must say, watching it now and as a much more world-weary 30-year-old woman, this whole episode after the candy felt entirely like men bitching about faults, sexual harassment accusations, and making feminists out to be feminazis, in quote, who take everything too seriously and just ruin well-meaning men's lives. First of all, in the early to mid-90s was a time of equating feminists with feminazis and making protesting out to be pointless and ridiculous. PCU, anyone? Mm-hmm. Very true. Second of all, knowing that what a boys' club the writer's room was, and having read so many accounts of women in the comedy world constantly dealing with sexual harassment, and I mean because pretty much every woman who has ever accused anyone of sexual harassment is disbelieved because this attitude still prevails, these were the themes that dominated the episode for me. I get that there is a nice parody of specific parts of modern media in a similar vein as last episode's Action News, but that didn't make the rest of it any better. The part with the hysterical woman crying on Sally Jesse Raphael and her terrible line, which I'm thankful to Henry for talking about, is pretty much the thesis of the episode for me. Even the jokes on the protest signs minimize sexual harassment as a problem, not to mention Homer did touch her butt, intention aside, just like the non-sexist intention of the episode's writers. The fact that the entire episode focused on proving the wrong man's pureness and innocence with no awareness or discussion of consent or sexual harassment as a real problem was pretty disappointing. Homer's innocence report speech, "I've done some bad things in my life, but harassing women is not one of them," just feels like countless men's response to the accusations from women, where the men are so sure of their rightness and victimization that they refuse to listen to how what they were doing actually isn't okay. If they had chosen a completely different topic for their send-up of media exploiting and manipulating people, since taking the topic in reverse would obviously have been way too dark, I'm sure it would have worked and helped and held up. Whew, feminism rant over. Have to go rewatch Lisa versus Malibu Stacy real quick.
Thank you for that comment. It was great.
Yes, thank you very much, Michelle. I agree with you. I think, too, there was not a lot of talk about consent in this episode at all, and that it is easy to overlook that, like, we look at Homer's intention of being a pig who wanted to eat candy, but he did touch her butt.
Like, it is true, yeah.
Her butt was touched through his choice to do so.
And even though they engineer a really outlandish situation in which Homer is completely innocent, and it's just so bizarre that there's no way for him to back out of it, I feel like the idea of giving Homer the benefit of the doubt is kind of not cool. Just because I speak for all women, but I want to say that I feel like the existence of being a woman is basically never being left alone. And yes. I feel like there's nothing more I value than being left alone and not being bothered by people. but it just like I just see this every day through my eyes. I'm not experiencing it. I just feel like it's hard to give anyone the benefit of the doubt when you don't know if someone's going to be a creep to you or something like that. Like mm-hmm. I see at the place I do a lot of writing and research at, my favorite pizza pub, like there will be guys who will just not leave the bartenders alone. And I'm mm-hmm. thinking, they know you're scum. They are not going to go home and sleep with you. They have to pretend you're funny. They're basically your captives for this entire time. I'm just like, oh, this must suck. And yeah. I wish I could do something.
No, it's gross. Mm-hmm. Like, again, if...
And add in the threat of rape to that, and yep. it's even worse. So, yep. yeah. I'm not here to lecture anyone, but
no.
I just feel like if you're not aware of that, mm-hmm. you might not take this issue as seriously.
Yeah, and I think it's... Yeah. And no, it's why sorry. I tried... It is why I kind of tried to sermonize in the episode of, like, it is absolutely the reverse. It is not that there are a yeah. ton of false accusations. It is that there are a ton of things that are never prosecuted and nothing ever happens. There are way more underreported ones. And it's also that false accusations by our media get talked up way more when they're proven false than they talk about somebody not even doing anything. Like that when there's one false accusation of sexual abuse, you hear about it nonstop, and then it just becomes, for guys who don't care and don't yeah. give a shit about women, they just use it as their next proof of like, see, all these women are lying. We shouldn't believe him. Like, and I also do want to say the bit about it does sound like a man X in a writer's room full of men who says, and obviously I didn't sexually harass him. I'm a pig, but I'd never do that. Like, that is what Homer sounds like.
It really is. It does. Yeah.
And it also reminds me, if as long as I'm talking about other shows you should watch on the show, Difficult People.
It's a good show.
Created by Julie Klausner, who is used to being the one woman in a television writing room. She did an episode where she is the only woman in a writer's room, and that everybody else in there is just like, you know, one of these bitches who like is a feminist or whatever. And she's like, oh no, I started working here because I fucking hate women. They're all, I'd kill them if I could. Like,
that's awesome.
And they just go like, awesome. Yeah. High five.
There's one thing I want to address though, before we move on. We got a comment and I want to believe it was written in good faith and I'm not yelling at this person because they're a patron, but they sincerely asked like, why didn't you guys get mad at what they saw as the sexism of the babysitter using a game cartridge to trick Bart?
Yes. And if that was used as a shoe distracting Lisa or something,
right,
that
right.
would be seen as sexist if that happened. So why not the inversion of that with a video game and a boy?
Yeah, and I want to say that just like racism, sexism is a power relationship and there are different degrees of it. Mm-hmm. And frankly, being sexist against a white man is not as severe as being sexist against a woman. Mm-hmm. And I want to say there are some negative stereotypes about men that suck and limit their roles in the world, but we have it pretty good for the most part. But there are things just like, well, men can't have emotions, men can't work these jobs. If a man is a teacher, surely he's a pedophile. Why would he be interested in children?
There are things like that. You're a less
yeah,
of a man.
Yeah, there are things like that, but I mean, those are harmful, but ultimately, I think the way the sexism against women works is it filters into institutions, it filters into just like every element of their lives, and I think I am mostly shielded from that kind of thing.
No, and I think too, it's something too about like homophobia, I think I think one of its roots is in hating men being in a feminine way.
Yeah.
Or they also think like, well, what if this gay man treated me like I would want to treat a woman? Oh no, like it's all a hatred of women is kind of at the root of a lot of things in American culture.
That is very, very true.
That's very true. And I think, and that thing about men and emotions too, is just like that they being unable to express your emotions is then definitely related to the high amount of suicide in men versus women. Like that you can't, crying is stupid, right? Emotions are dumb. Like you be a tough guy. Come on, be tough. Like that's very damaging to people. And
yeah.
You have to deal with that your whole fucking life as a
guy. And ultimately, gender roles are stupid. It's cool if you like them, but they do hurt a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So Anita Rose says, this is the first YouTube poop for YouTube in this app. Yeah, I don't know if we should explain what you... I mean, if you're... I think I'm old, but I know what a YouTube poop is.
I know
it's basically... they just chop up the episode and like sort of make it like a Tim and Eric style version of the thing you're used to. Mm-hmm. My favorite one is the earliest one I think I saw was of the episode where Peggy of King of the Hill, where Peggy goes to a Boggle tournament, and they just replay Hank going Boggle over and over.
My favorite, or the first one I remember seeing and knowing it as the brand YouTube poop, was Mama Luigi from the Super Mario World cartoon. That was a big one for me. And then seeing people do that with the CDI Nintendo games as well. Though if you're, I think I assume too often that like, well, if you're a listener of this, you're also a gamer, right? And like, probably. I'd be interested to see how many listeners of ours are gamers and how many don't understand our deep references to old video games. Grandpa versus sexual inadequacy comments are up next. Lady of Old Boots said, it seems a little unfair to call, this is it me on this one. I'll take the blame for this.
I think I said that.
I think it seems a little unfair to call Marge a prude for not wanting to look at porn with Homer. From her perspective, it might be pretty annoying that her fatter, objectively less attractive partner couldn't get excited for her, but could for pictures in a book. I've definitely heard the frustration from married women before.
Oh, yeah. I think I said prude, but I wasn't judging Marge for not wanting to buy a porno book with Homer. Mm-hmm. I think Marge is just a kind of a prude in general, so that would offend her sensibilities. But I think most women would be offended by, like, I need to look at pictures of other women before I can have sex with you.
That's true. Yeah. But man, porn's awesome, though.
Porn is great.
Well, and speaking of sexuality, I had asked people for, are they still getting fucked in the head by abstinence-only education in America?
Oh, is this me reading next?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so Batman Boy 11 says, as per Hank's query, I still listen to an abstinence-only talk in my Catholic high school in grade 10 in the fucking year 2011, where they use clips from Shrek and Spider-Man to appeal to us youngins. Oh my god, to talk about waiting till marriage for sex, despite the people talking have both been drug addicts who fucked a lot and now we're born-again Christians. That's how it always happens. At the time, I thought it was stupid bullshit, and now it's even more fucking bonkers that it happened.
More than most things in Christianity, the born-again thing really gets to me of just like, okay, so wait, I could do every horrible thing ever, but if then on my deathbed I'm like, oh, I believe in Jesus Christ, and if I mean it, then I go to heaven. Like,
recant on your deathbed. It's exactly. Homer's advice.
It's so fucking true. It's so true. But but especially these people saying like, hey, wait, don't have fun. I had fun, and now I paid some consequences for it. So you have no fun.
I made a job out of paying consequences for it. They were trying to embrace when I had sex education in Catholic school. It's like, yes, sex is really good. Sex is great. It's fun to have sex, but don't fucking do it. Yes. And I remember they wanted to scare us with AIDS because, you know, everyone's going to get AIDS. AIDS is the new epidemic. And they're like, well, imagine if there were 5 planes and we told you if you got on one of those planes, you go to Disneyland, but one of the planes crashed. That's the likelihood of getting AIDS from a sexual encounter.
Whoa, wow.
it was like a really prolonged, like, you kids like Disneyland, right? How about if I told like this huge story? And it's like, if you're on the wrong plane, you die of AIDS.
Wow.
And then we watched the fucking video Kirk Cameron made with his wife about how abstinence is so cool. Kirk Cameron is a vile garbage man.
Yeah. By the way, if you replaced Christianity with Islam in that story,
oh, yeah, yeah.
People would all say, can you believe they're doing this in like this religion? But in America, it's like, well, yeah, it's a religion in schools. Duh. Like,
we talked about American Dad. There's a great episode where they go to Saudi Arabia and Stan loves it because they're just as conservative as he is.
Yes, and they
also hate women.
Once he got over his disgust, his Islamophobia, he's like, oh, yeah, wait, these guys are as hateful as Americans. Got it.
There's a great song in it, too.
All right. Michael Hashizume says, when I was in high school a little over a decade ago in a pretty liberal part of the country, we didn't have abstinence-only education, but they did a lot of scared straight kind of stuff. One infamous part of the curriculum was watching a slideshow of close-ups of genitals with severe symptoms of various STDs.
They did that to us, too.
Fun. Oh, I didn't have to see that.
Yeah, we got the herpes slideshow.
Damn. They didn't even want us to show us a dick. Shout out to this episode referencing one of the funniest parts of a Hitchcock movie, the ending bit of North by Northwest, which we really did miss there. The train entering a tunnel, meaning sex, is the final shot of North by Northwest, which is when the main couple finally fucks because they are married at the end, and that's the only time you're allowed to fuck.
That's true. And on a train.
And so the camera leaves them on a train as they're about to enjoy their honeymoon, and then the final shot is a train entering a tunnel.
I've seen that movie about 3 times in theater since I moved out here. I love it. And every time that ending scene happens, there's a huge laugh. And I wonder if that was the same in 1959 when the movie came out originally. I wonder if it went over people's heads.
I wonder, yeah.
I have to think.
I feel like in the 50s, nobody noticed when a character was obviously gay, and nobody noticed when a sex joke happened right in their face.
I mean, I think that was just Hitchcock saying, you won't let me show anything, so I'm just going to have this giant metaphor at the end saying, fuck you. Next one's from Scott Scallion, who says, the whole exchange between Homer and Marge about Grandpa saying he was an accident is a great microcosm of political discourse. Step one, outrage. Step two, redefine the point of outrage after contradiction is pointed out. Step three, pivot completely to a new argument when full hypocrisy is revealed. Oh boy, am I familiar with all this?
Yep.
This is like arguing with the most infuriating people. This is exactly what they do.
Yes. Yeah. You say, Marge says, you do this all the time to Bart. Well, wait, no, when I do it, it's cute. Anyway, changing the subject is like, yeah, that is, I had many an argument like that with my dad and all the people who stand in for my dad in my life. it is very annoying. And then we got Killian here saying, I'm surprised that Oakley Weinstein's script for a show at the Rand Corporation in the 60s was not mentioned. And then he links to this story, which I'd never heard of until this as well.
Yeah, hopefully we can talk about him. One of the questions I forgot to ask him, and I wasn't sure if it was kosher to ask him because it is considered like, talk about your failures. But he said he made a lot of pilots with Josh.
Yeah.
And I don't know about any of them. So presumably there are 5 or 6 shows that he filmed 1 episode of and that are just kind of out there somewhere.
So this one didn't even get past the script points.
Oh, okay.
And it was that Oakley shared this script on Twitter as he is wont
to do. They're such great historians of their era.
So, though, he and Josh were producing for HBO a show that would have kind of been Mad Men before Mad Men, where a young, smart young lad gets hired to the Rand Corporation in the 60s and then is exposed to the horrors of what it was really like then. Mm. And all this period stuff that in the script sounds very similar to stuff that happened in Mad Men and similar comments and culture, but that it was set at the Rand Corporation. So clearly O&W were really into the Rand Corporation in general. It wasn't just them bringing it up. Oh, and there was one more comment I didn't. So there is some discussion on if Harry Shearer actually saw the day the clown cried or didn't, because we did say that repeating the story Harry Shearer had told on the Howard Stern show he had seen the day the clown cried.
You point out that sick little monkey's off. Tad Komorowski, who's a patron, pointed that out.
That's who said it.
Okay.
So
was I stealing your fire?
No. Well, so he had first he said that Harry Shearer could not have seen it. He called the story BS. And the other people like, really? I don't know. And so then Thad responded to that with, trust me, my friend was Jerry's personal archivist for many years. A complete, presentable cut of the film didn't exist.
Mm.
A decent chunk did leak as part of some German documentary last year. It's all bits and pieces and does not reflect its reputation. Shearer's story is BS.
I would believe him because as an animation historian, he knows a lot of men in their 90s. So I'm sure he's heard a lot of stories.
He's had to hear a lot of stories on their deathbeds.
But thank God he's doing it. So thank you, Thad.
No, thank you, Thad. And everybody should read Sick Little Monkeys is amazing in just it's like the minutiae it goes into of like, this drawing was this guy, this was created then just especially once the moment in Ren and Stimpy history happens where John Kay is removed from the project, you get told in as best detail as I bet anybody else would tell you in a book how much involvement he had or not on the episodes that followed his firing.
Yes, it kind of gave me a new love for Ren and Stimpy, even though I loved it when I was a kid. I rewatched it again. I bought the book. I rewatched it again. And now there's a new edition of the book out. So I think we talked about Sick Little Monkeys roughly a million times on Laser Time and here. If you haven't read it, please read it. If you don't think you're that into Ren and Stimpy, it will let you know how important that show is.
It's an amazing resource. I mean, it also taught me about the Mighty Mouse episode where they made fun of the Alvin and the Chipmunks. So many great things.
I think it was Melvin and the Tree Weasels. Yes. So, that was Talk to the Audience episode 4. Thank you for your continued support. We're going to be, keeping on with Talking Critic. I do want to say that the technical error that was causing a little tiny bit of buzzing in every episode or some recent episodes. That's fixed now, so don't worry about it. And I apologize for that. We are bummed out when that happens. We want to make a really good product for you guys. But yeah, and I think as the months roll on, we'll start talking about what will follow Talking Critic. We might take a break. I'm not sure. We haven't talked about it. But we do want to give you an incentive to keep donating. We don't want to lose a bunch of people after. I mean, I assume in good faith you would not just be like, well, I got my part of the deal. I'm out of here.
Yeah, well, and we are continuing towards that $8,000 goal.
Like, yes, we're so close.
We had the big jump at the start, and now it's just been a slow trend upwards, which I will take a slow trend upwards over flattening out or going down. That's for damn sure. So.
And I believe next month we'll start talking to the people who are on our king size Homer tiers,
yes,
and the one below that about their episodes we'll be making for and with them. Mm-hmm. So the deal was, you know, give or form. Every 4 months you give, we will make an episode either based on your design or with you based on your design.
Yeah.
So that'll start happening next month.
About any random animation of your choice, animate series, within reason, we said.
Let's
we're
hope
not
it's
gonna...
La Blue Girl.
La Blue Girl is the perfect one.
Urutsuki Doji. Yeah, no, please don't. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you next month for another episode of Talk to the Audience.
Infotainment.